Hey, Broadway fans, we're back for another week of Broadway Breakdown here on Popcorn Talk. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Oh, my God.
All right. I had a friend who kept calling it Calgary, and everybody...
Does everybody do that now?
It's not the never-ending road to Canada. Stop.
Calgary. You don't know that. Ooh. It could be. It's the new version.
It's the new version.
I want a Canadian.
So they sing in the Canadian version.
I want a Canadian Les Miserables. I think that would be great.
There is one.
Oh, yeah. Yes. They did a whole thing.
You got to go to Canada to get it.
I would go just to go, but I would also
I'm all about that.
No, so we're enough puns at home. Anyway, hi guys, welcome to our show. Sorry, we are here with Broadway Breakdown on Popcorn Talk. Today we're talking Les Mis movie version.
Whoop, whoop.
I am your host Brianna Phipps. You can find me everywhere bfipps14, except Snapchat, as I say every week, bfipps1214. I know I say this every week and I never really snap, but you know, follow me. Why not?
Follow you on the occasion that you do snap.
The occasion, yeah, that I do, and it's hilarious. It's usually a lot of fun.
I'm 123 Jackie V on platforms, but Jackie V 123 on Snapchat. And then we have a Twitter for Broadway Breakdown. It's at Broadway V Down. Yes. So please follow us there as well.
And we're on Facebook too. We're on Facebook. Is joining us today. She's not in the booth. She's
here.
Yay.
They let me out for just this one show.
Just one more day.
And then I'm back in there. You can find me where all the shenanigans will ensue at atorres890.
And guys, make sure you like, subscribe. We are on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud. We're on Google Play now.
Ooh,
and
fancy.
You know, hit that little thumbs up right below the screen right now and give us some love.
And we had a really nice, I said I was going to read the comments last time. We actually had a really, like, wonderful complimentary comment.
Aww.
It was said something to the effect of, like, we do for theater what AfterBuzz does for television, which was really nice. And now I will shout out your name on the next episode because I didn't write down the name before I came in here today.
Well, you're awesome. I might look it up while we're having some downtime.
It was a really wonderful
review. Alexis will be in the chat role, too, if anyone that wants to chat along with us while we discuss.
Chat with me!
Before we start our show, we're going to start with This Week in Theater that's always brought to us by Robert Diamond and BroadwayWorld.com, and Jackie's going to take that.
Well, away. Robert Diamond gave us some updates on the cast for both the Chicago touring cast for Hamilton and for the replacements in the Broadway cast. It's a long list. It's very involved. I'm just going to refer you to his article on that one. And then he mentions there are two new cast members in Hairspray Live, Rosie O'Donnell and Sean Hayes.
Which Rosie O'Donnell's playing a character I don't think I've heard of.
Yeah,
She's the gym teacher.
Yes.
Did we have a gym teacher?
No.
Okay.
I don't remember.
I wanted to make sure.
I don't remember in the original musical there ever being a gym teacher.
Oh, man.
But
I'm happy that Sean Hayes is going to be Mr. Pinky.
Yeah.
I'm happy that they're both in it. I like them both.
I'm happy Kristen Chenoweth and Sean Hayes are reuniting.
I
wrote it on my Twitter. I was so excited.
It's going to be fabulous. We're so excited about Hairspray Live. It's looking to be a really good cast. Since I'm from Maryland, not from Baltimore, but since I'm from Maryland, I really do enjoy Hairspray. Also, he lists a lot of the reviews for Cats, which is featuring Leona Lewis, and their reviews are not nice.
It's so weird to see such a... Okay. Leona Lewis is a beautiful young lady,
and she sings so nicely.
It's just weird for that character,
yeah.
Especially if you watch the old, like, what was it? It was BBC, right? The DVD.
The VHS one?
Yeah. Oh, I have it on both. I have a DVD and VHS, and it's like, she's supposed to look like this old, decrepit cat, and she's just like, look at me as a glam rock fan.
The whole point of Cats is that they're asking to be reincarnated.
No, like, her makeup was so on point, I was like, I don't even know which cat this is, because she looks so good. I was like, but she sang so beautifully though.
But I do like her singing, but most of the reviews are basically saying that she's not that great of an actress.
So the reviews are saying listen to the soundtrack and not watch it. Is that what they're saying?
They actually don't like her singing either, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Get out of town. She's
and it's a lot of like comparing her to the original cast, but I think you should check out Robert's article so you can get an idea of all the reviews for it. I'm not that big of a fan of Cats in general, so a lot of what the reviews say, I'm just like, that's just my feeling about Cats.
Yeah, true. I was a fan as a kid of like certain songs, and then I grew up and I was like, this is a musical.
This is a story.
Yeah.
It works as bits.
It works as songs. They're very beautiful songs, but when you try to put, and this is also what happens with some musicals, it's like you try to put certain songs together, mm-hmm. and you're like, I'm not sure that quite works.
Yeah, see, I every time I see it, since my mom got to play the understudy of the white cat, Victoria, I guess was the name of the white cat back in, I don't even know, the 90s, I guess, or the 80s. Cats has a special place in my heart, but I've watched it now since I was a little kid, and I was just like, okay, this play is a little strange, but I can admire the fact that it's literally just cats dancing the entire time. Like, those are people who are dancing the entire time and singing. That's a lot of work.
The costume is amazing. The makeup is amazing.
But yeah, like, the actual writing of the play, I'm just like...
The story just isn't.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, you took it from a 10-line paragraph and made it into a 2-hour cat fest. How did that happen? I don't understand. But it's, yeah, I understand that it's probably a little weird, but I feel bad that they're just trashing on the play a little bit.
I mean, critics trash on a lot of things, and then people go see them and love it. So I don't always listen to the critics anyway.
Yeah, that does happen a lot.
Are they going to make it into a DVD? Because I'm all for that. You will take my money. Just so I can have another one next to my original Cats tapes.
They're also doing a revival of Miss Saigon, which...
That's my dad's favorite musical of all time.
It's really exciting.
He's seen it
to me.
So many times.
Can I say that the only thing... Like, not the only thing, but the main thing that pops in my head when I hear Miss Saigon is that SNL skit when Broadway was, like, going back. And Kenan Thompson was the creator, and he was like, is it time to revive Miss Saigon?
Yeah!
Like, that's all I can think of when I read that was, like, oh, Kenan Thompson must be so happy.
He's so happy right excited. Now. And for the rest of the details, of course, check out Robert Diamond's article. And then the last article was the new Sondheim musical with David Ives to premiere in 2017. We don't have a lot of information about it yet, but again, I'm going to refer you to Robert's article so you can read the companion piece.
I mean, yeah, if it's Stephen Sondheim, I'm going to listen to it/go see it because I love Stephen Sondheim.
Oh, yeah. No, he's fantastic.
Like, what if it's like Dogs the Musical?
I'm more of a dog person than a cat person, so why
there
not?
There you go. She's already signed up.
I'm signed up.
I'm here for Bunnies the Musical. When you make that happen, I'll be there.
Oh, wow.
All right, thank
I'll take red pandas and or foxes.
Whoa, oh, I love red pandas.
Right? Sorry, I didn't mean to. We can continue. I just... All the cute little fuzzy animals make
Let's
place.
Let's just have a whole animal musical.
Zootopia, here we go.
Zootopia. Well, that's kind of a Lion King, isn't it?
No, it's yeah, pretty much.
All Which right. is a great musical. But anyway, I do want to do a correction because last week we said that Les Mis is about the French Revolution. It's not.
Yeah, we saw the catch. And I think part of it...
The French Revolution occurred about 30 years earlier, and this is kind of like... it's a local Paris revolution that happened as a result
and
of
what
the French Revolution.
And what I was saying was I think that the reason people get confused is because when the play starts, it's like shortly after... a French Revolution, it says. In the beginning of the movie, at least, that's what it says. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's...
And I think that confuses people a little bit.
Yeah.
It ends, like, it begins on the end of Napoleon Bonaparte's rule, which is, like, essentially the French Revolution. Yeah. So it's, like, the events are a catalyst, the events of the French Revolution. No, the events of the French Revolution are a catalyst for this, but at the same time, the actual revolution that you're seeing is
on
the
a smaller scale.
June Rebellion in Paris.
Yeah. I think that's just why the people constantly get that wrong.
It's like an anti-monarchy movement, which was coming out of the French Revolution, and then they had another one after that. And so, and at the time period, there were a lot of like anti-monarchy movements that lead us up until today in our in the Western culture of not having monarchies.
Yeah,
yeah. So I kind of want to start this off by like just going through the cast that we have for the film.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
just giving like our opinions on them and how we thought they did. Let's start with Hugh Jackman.
See, I liked him in this, but I'm also biased because I also love him like Boy from Oz and like things like that.
I mean, he's
but
Hugh Jackman.
But I know some people who are like advocates for not having Hugh Jackman in theater. Period. And I'm like, what? Well,
the thing to me is like Hugh, and this is coming from a place of me loving Hugh Jackman as an actor. His voice is not that great to me. I don't really like his voice, but I don't think they could have cast anyone else as Jean Valjean because he embodied that role so well to me. He, and you have people like Colm who are already way too old to play that part.
I love him so much.
I had no problem with him.
Also, Hugh Jackman like killed himself for this part.
No, he did.
He lost a ton of weight for just the opening scenes, then gained it back. Mm-hmm. He went on a 36-hour water deprivation so he could make his skin look. He like deprived himself of drinking water for 36 hours to make his skin look like flimsy and stuff like he when he was in the very beginning scene. Like he hauled around like all this stuff like because they didn't have the budget. They really wanted to shoot the opening in I think Nice, France.
I think so. Yeah.
And they didn't have the budget and they finally got money but they couldn't have as much crew, so he helped set up and carry stuff. Like he loved this role, and so I have to respect him for the fact of how much effort he put into it.
Yeah.
And I loved him in the role.
He's entertaining to watch. That's the thing, is like his facial expressions and the way he embodies the role are so moving that the fact that his voice doesn't sound like Alfie Bowe's or like Colm Wilkinson's
Don't even get me started.
It doesn't really bother me.
I wasn't bothered by his voice in any song except Bring Him Home. That was the one song I was not okay with his voice because he couldn't hit the high notes.
Okay, so that wasn't just me where it kind of wasn't hitting my ear correctly because it looks like he was trying, but he couldn't do it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's his voice or what, but for whatever reason, he wasn't hitting those high notes that you're supposed to.
The one that bothered me was, I don't actually remember the name of the song, but the song where he's kind of having this, like, mental dilemma about whether or not to reveal himself as Jean Valjean, and then he eventually does. Most of that is talked through, and that's my only problem with that song. It's like, I was like, okay, either you're gonna talk this or you're gonna sing this, because it's like this in-between is like a little bit bothersome.
I mean, I know
me.
Brianna and I have talked about it like outside of the studio that we've talked about how it, I think you were there also, that we've talked about that there were a lot of points in the movie that felt like they could have sung through that, but they didn't, and they chose to talk it through. And I was like, no, that's why it's powerful. You have to sing it. Sing it to me.
And then, the other thing that I was kind of waiting for is the musical version I saw, he rips open his shirt, and it says 24601, and I'm like, we have the Wolverine here, and he's not, like, ripping open his shirt and showing...
I didn't see that when I saw it.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it depends, because I saw it when I went to go see it with my mom, one actor did that, and then when I went to go see it with my dad, nothing.
Oh, see, I had no
I think
clue.
He had, like, an actual, like, his jacket.
It was on his jacket.
I didn't know that was an option.
Really?
Because the version I saw, the guy just rips off his shirt, and it's, like, they take a light and shine it on, so it's not actually written on there, but it's, like, a lighting effect where you see 24601 written on his chest.
Well, I wish that they had ripped Hugh Jackman's shirt off, but...
So that was my pet peeve, because I was like, this musical's so sad, you could give us a little Wolverine shirtless action here.
Oh, but I thought, overall, I thought he did well, especially as an actor, even if a lot of people don't really like his voice, I think his acting ability, especially anytime he looked into the camera, my heart just exploded.
I know we're going to discuss the ending later, but that ending always makes me cry, 95% of the reason is because, like, Hugh Jackman is just so moving. It's so moving in that ending.
That was great.
So let's move on to probably which will be the most controversial.
Oh.
Russell Crowe.
Norm Lewis.
Here we go.
Not Norm Lewis.
I have to agree with Jackie on this one. I love Norm Lewis to an unhealthy obsession kind of thing, but I will be the middle person here, because I know that you liked Russell Crowe.
It's not that I liked him. Okay. I'm just... as a devil's advocate type of deal.
Sure.
In Hollywood, producers put so much money into the film, and while we all want to see the theater people, they're like, what's going to make us capitalize? What's going to get us the most money back for our film?
Yeah.
And they're going to be like,
but Russell Crowe.
People don't know, like, the theater people know Norm Lewis, but maybe people outside the theater world don't know him. They're not going to go see a film for that name. Yeah. Like, that's just how their mind will work. They want an A-list star.
Go.
And I would have a worse problem with it if he didn't act it very well, which I thought he did a great job acting it, and at least he can hold a note. Although it wasn't powerful enough voice, I thought...
Jackie! Continue.
She can disagree with me all she wants.
I watched when I watched, I watched it this weekend, and I was fast forwarding through all of his parts because I was like, I can't. I either had to mute it or fast forward.
I have to give him credit though, for especially for coming back out for the Oscar performance and seeing after everybody was bashing on him.
No,
I didn't think he did a terrible job. Did I think there could have been better choices? Yes. Did I wish that they had picked someone that had a more powerful voice? Yes. But.
Oh, no, no. I mean, yeah, I completely understand with you, and that's what I'm saying. I liked what he did. His voice just wasn't what I wanted to, like, it just wasn't
enough. It wasn't powerful.
Yeah, exactly.
He couldn't hit those end notes to the power that they need to be hit.
Yeah, like, Stars was hard for me a little bit. I was like, whew.
To me, it didn't even, like, sound like it was anywhere near what the notes should have been.
Before we even get into, like, most of the movie is that... The confrontation is huge. Everybody knows that. So the fact that I would rather listen to Neil Patrick Harris and was it Jason Segel?
Yeah.
Confrontation more than I would like to see. I mean, Hugh Jackman was really good in that scene. Sword fight was really good.
Well, and that was Russell Crowe's idea to do the sword fight.
No, I thought it was
great. They were going to do it just singing through. And Russell Crowe was like, this is film. It's not like, well, on stage you can watch two people singing at each other. It's going to look weird on film of two people standing in a room singing each other when one is just in
reach. At empty chairs and empty tables, they have someone sitting and we see their pores for like however long.
Dear God, that was there. Yeah.
Just, whoa.
Gosh.
Whoa.
But it's like, I mean,
that's
when
like
you're
my
talking,
favorite part of the entire movie. So now I'm just getting mad.
Because when you're talking though about something like a medium of film where you have the ability to do things you can't do on stage, like a sword fight.
Yeah, of course.
You would want to insert that in. Or like reflecting on the, you know, we'll get to the empty chairs.
I thought it was a good addition. I agree with you on that one. But yeah, it's just, Russell Crowe was weird.
So yes, they could have chosen someone different, but they also could have chosen someone worse.
True.
So, it's not Pierce Brosnan.
No, I will give you that. I will give you that. Mamma Mia was
rough.
Sorry,
that's the one I cannot even anything
Mamma
with.
Mamma Mia was rough
with
him
Mamma
in there.
Mia.
But the next person that we're going to be talking about really blew me away. Just me, though.
That
I know
was,
a lot
like,
of people.
Advertisement.
I was like, guys, she blew me away. But I don't know if you wanted to introduce her or not.
We got Anne Hathaway, of course.
She deserved that Oscar.
Heck,
she deserved every inch of that.
Same with
Oscar.
Hugh Jackman. Like, put her entire soul and life. Like, lost weight. Like, went through all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Her hair
she
is
cut her
really
hair.
Being cut on
that scene.
That is for real.
Yeah, that was rough. Because I was like, you could hurt somebody cutting someone's
and
hair like that.
And, you know, there's people that get on her about, oh, she didn't sing pretty during
she's not supposed to sing pretty.
Well, on stage you want to hear that, you go to hear the prettiness and like the emotion comes through
nope.
that
nope.
But when you're on film and you're so close and you can get those emotions, like I need to see you in pain.
No, I
liked
her slobbery mess.
I the whole direction though, I mean, she was fitting the direction of the scene as well, because that whole like prostitute scene is much darker in the movie than it is in the play.
Well, maybe,
it's kind of like I mean, yeah, there are some like heavy dark things going on, but it's a little bit more fun, whereas here you're just like, no, seriously, these people are nasty and this is terrible. And then she's literally like, this guy is having sex with her as she's like
sobbing.
Saying you're making love to someone who's already dead.
Yeah.
And you're like, holy crap.
Well,
that is,
and that's
like,
why they chose to move the song is because they didn't feel like in the movie you've just met her when she sings that song, and it would have a whole different meaning having her sing it right after the factory as opposed to having her singing it after she's gone through all of this stuff and put herself into the lowest part of her life.
Yeah.
It made sense to me. I was okay with that move.
Yeah.
And I don't think... I don't know anybody who was actually bothered with the fact that they moved that, but I think my actual favorite scene is as much as it was really painful to watch, was when she looks straight into the camera as she's crawling out of bed and saying her line. And she was...
And that was her choice.
Which was great, because I actually had to stop and go, oh, that was too real for me. I need a minute.
And I love the fact that she, like, did this because she wanted to play this role so badly because her mother had played it on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that...
Yeah.
Like,
and
honored
she,
her mom in a way.
And she said that she even cried a lot in rehearsals because she wanted to do her mom justice, also because Fantine is a very sad character. And so anytime I hear someone like, we want to hear something pretty, I'm like, no, I want to see snot. Like, that's what I want.
And she does have a very beautiful voice, and she sings, like... When you get to the end scene, or when you get to other
Fantine ghost scenes,
she's singing very beautifully, and she's singing very beautifully in that factory scene. So when you're watching it, you're not like, this is a person who is struggling with the music, you're watching a person who's just like struggling, and that acting informs certain other choices. Yeah. It's I'm less bothered by it when it's an acting choice to not sound pretty than when you just Russell Crowe yourself and suck at singing.
Dear God. That's true, though.
So Samantha Barks was probably, for me, the biggest surprise that they put her in the film.
Because
for the longest time, I kept hearing Lea Michele.
Yeah. I thought for sure they were going to go with that. I was surprised.
I'm actually
they did the
glad.
Last
no, I'm
no,
really
I'm happy. I love Samantha Banks, especially since her 25th anniversary. The 25th anniversary when she did that, I was like, oh.
The only
you're
problem
so
I have with her in this entire film is how tiny her we. I just it her corset was so tiny. Ridiculous. Because in the actual play when she plays Eponine, she wears a giant coat. Yeah. She's got a hat. Like she looks like she's a healthy human being.
This looked like.
Let's make her boobs look real
and
big.
And it was just so... It that was just what so bothered me. Different from head to waist.
Yeah. It was crazy. I was like, I don't know if that was just a costume choice, but dear God, that poor girl. I don't know how she was able to sing.
The scene where she's singing On My Own and she's like, and ends up like sitting and crying in the rain.
I don't know how she was able to do
there's
that.
There's a close-up on her, and the close-up hits at such a level where you're seeing like boobs
just
and face.
Clean.
And I was like, this is not this character, you know? And it's distracting because she's so talented and she's acting her heart out and she's singing so well. And like... You're like, I'm being distracted by the fact that her cleavage is, like, in my face.
It's just real good, though.
Yeah,
I'm not going
to... the male seats, okay.
I guess.
I don't know what men are going to be like, yeah, sad Eponine, yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're even looking at her sad face.
This is not that kind
so
of
So I thought
musical.
That was one of the most pleasant surprises of the film, was that they did take her. And it kind of makes me wonder, I was like, did they have to fight to have her be in it? Because she wasn't a name, really. Like, she was in the 25th anniversary.
She auditioned, like, something like 7 times.
Yeah.
Something crazy. But I was just it always goes through my mind with the producers.
Maybe it was
did they have to fight? Because Lea Michele would have been a name. She was on Glee.
No, right. But I think maybe, and also she's been on Broadway, like, forever. But I think also, maybe Lea Michele, like, dropped out last minute, and they're like, oh my God, we're panicking. Well, this girl auditioned 7 times, and she's done it on Broadway. We'll just throw her in there.
But, you know, they had Aaron Tveit, who yeah. like more at that point in time, like now he's on like the CW and other like things that people know, but like
so
at the time he was predominantly just a Broadway actor.
Yeah. True. And that because that was right before Graceland started.
Yep.
So I mean I feel like they were probably of the mindset of okay, let's cast like some main like a, mm-hmm. some of the main beefier roles as like Hollywood stars, and then we can pepper
ones.
It with Broadway
here
and there.
Amanda Seyfried. Seyfried, how you feel about Valjean? I'm not Valjean Javert.
Me
That's
too.
How I feel about Amanda
yeah.
Seyfried.
I actually really like her, though, because...
We're just opposite all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, it's so funny. I like her in that role, though, because Cosette, to me, is that kind of, like, la 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 la
okay,
was,
that
know,
makes sense.
Like,
the vibrato was too overwhelming for me. Like,
no,
I couldn't even pay attention to the words, because
like,
all I heard was,
I literally thought, no offense, Jackie, that someone was just doing this every time she was singing.
But they're
like,
doing that to Eddie Redmayne, too.
True. Yeah,
no,
his vibrato was really bad.
We'll get to that.
But I think for her too, it's like usually I can try to justify like less singing for me if I get the acting part, and because Cosette's such a tiny role, especially in the film, like she's barely there.
See her. Yeah,
it's just I can't comprehend why we couldn't get a more soprano.
It was rough
because I've heard her sing lower and it's fine, but I just don't think she's as high of a soprano for that.
I think the other reason it didn't bother me, though, is because Cosette's role is, like,
so
not my favorite. I just don't like that role in general. Like, and I understand why it has to be there. You have to have the young lovers. Like, there's a formula. It's been set up. Like, you have... Cosette's an important character to have in Jean Valjean's redemption. So I understand why the character is there, but, like, her songs are not interesting to me.
Yeah.
And,
no, yeah.
She's arguably the... least important character.
I mean, I always liked listening to at least the stage the stage play for A Heart Full of Love, because you can hear it. But in the
but
movie,
in Heart Full of Love, Eponine's the part I want to hear, not
yeah,
her.
Yeah, that's the part where I'm like, yay. But I don't know. I like her as an actress. It just, I don't know what it was. It
yeah, because I liked her in other things. I liked her in Mamma Mia.
Yeah, I thought she was
I liked her in Mean Girls.
I did like her in Mean Girls. That was great.
I even liked her in that Justin Timberlake Time movie that I didn't like.
Oh, I actually liked that movie. We're not going to get into that, though. But, yeah. I don't know. But she was just, it was just weird.
There was just something that just rubbed me the wrong way there.
I can't. That's the songs I usually just go, skip. Fast forward.
So going to Eddie Redmayne. The vibrato singing-wise didn't bother me.
That was really rough. We're trying not to be negative, but come on,
no,
guys.
No, I mean, I'm not going to be negative because I did like Eddie Redmayne. I didn't mind his voice. Like, he has that deeper kind of froggy voice, which a lot of people have.
I liked when he was singing about Cosette when he gets to I always forget what the actual, like, place that they're having drinks and doing their planning.
It's supposed to be the cafe.
Yeah, there you go. Cafe Red and Black. I always forget that, but I liked his...
I don't know if that's the cafe's actual name, but that's the name of the song. They just call it the cafe.
Yeah.
And then the song is the Cafe Red and Black song, so...
I'm exactly. So when they're at the cafe and he's talking, like, you can tell that he's like, I'm in love with this random woman I just met, and it's great. But... As the movie progresses, I'm like, what's happening?
I just always, whenever I see, because I've seen actors on Broadway do it too. Like, I've seen Tony Award actors, like, during their performance, to shake their whole head. And I'm like, is your jaw just so tight that your entire head is shaking? Like, doesn't it hurt?
Nick Jonas didn't do that. Just saying, guys. Just saying. Nick Jonas didn't do that.
I would rather have Eddie Redmayne than Nick Jonas.
To go back to what we were saying about
and Nick
empty
Jonas
chairs.
Does a fine job in the TV series Kingdom, I must say.
Oh, yeah. He looks great.
To go back to empty chairs, because the reason why it's one of my favorite parts of the entire film is because of all of the emotion, and because I'm so close to him, I get all of that emotion. That's why I like it, because I like it better than I do in the play, because in the play I don't feel like as emotional as I did watching the film.
Well, see, that's where I'm going to play devil's advocate, because I actually liked Nick
absolute opposite view.
Yeah, I actually liked Nick Jonas's version in the play, just because there was close-ups during that, because you're not actually in the play. He stood there with one light on him in his black robes, and that was it. And then they brought everybody else in the background, and then they disappeared. And I was like, "That's
no, I don't
that
like Nick Jonas either. I like the 10th anniversary guy, but
he was great too. I like him also.
And the guy who played Enjolras in the 25th anniversary apparently also plays Marius, which I think I would really like his. I love his voice, so I think I would like him as well. But anyway, the reason empty chairs and empty tables bother me is like the flip side of what you feel, because I like. The staging to me is what's the most moving about that, because Marius is like basically lucky to be there. And so when you have all these people coming in, and the staging is usually like people come in and stand around him or behind him, the people who have died in this revolution. So,
I mean, they could have made that choice, and I think that would have been good as well. But I just connected with his emotion.
I just wish that would have been there, because, like, to me, Marius singing by himself kind of, like, negates the fact that it's like, well, you're not, like, we're not getting this visual, the powerful visual of all the people who have died, and he's the only one left.
But I think it comes through because of his emotion. Because
he's so alone. It also bothered me.
Because he's so alone. Because
that close-up, like, is so nauseating, not because I think Eddie Redmayne is unattractive or anything like that.
It's just really, like, close.
It's so close, and it starts off with, like, a profile. And I'm like, I don't understand why this close-up is, like, a profile mostly in focus on his cheek. It's, like, a very odd choice. And then finally they do turn around and get to his face, and then the room is out of focus. And I was like, this song is about you in the cafe, and we've seen only, like, one wide shot of the actual cafe that was very brief. So I can't see any empty chairs or empty tables. So it was, like, so frustrating to me.
I'm just going to have to agree and disagree with you on that.
Yeah, so I'm also going to be on the same
boat. Really love that.
I hate the use of extreme close-ups to be like, look, we have film and I can show this emotion because I have a camera, you know?
Yeah, we're going to get to that later, and that might be part of it, is I don't mind the close-ups whatsoever.
Yeah, they make me, and that's a thing that bothers me in a lot of films, like most notably Hunger Games, when they have like this shaky Steadicam close-up. I'm like, people don't look at people like that. I'm so disoriented, because when I'm talking to like you or Alexis, I'm not like this close to your face. It's very disorienting.
And especially
when I whip the camera around, because that's also like a non-human thing to do. It's like, also, when I'm talking to you, I'm not like 2 inches from your face with my head moving around it. And I'm like, oh, this is just...
The one last thing I will say about Eddie Redmayne, because I thought it was just really cool, was He did that take 21 times.
Seriously?
That last one that we watched in the film, that's the 21st take, because he wanted to keep redoing it. Because he said that he built up some emotion getting to the end of the song, that at the end of the song, he wanted to redo it and have the emotion he had at the end be the emotion he had at the beginning. So that's why he looks so, like, worn down and
crying. Okay, I was wondering.
Because he's been crying probably for, like, an hour.
And maybe that's why he falls and he does, like, a little stumble into the chair in the beginning. And I was always like, that looks so natural that I wonder if it's a stumble that they just kept because it looks so
natural. I just can't imagine being in that mindset and that emotion for that long. Like, that would be really hard to
do. That's dedication right there, for sure.
And then...
this is Brianna's like top favorite.
I love him
so much.
Yeah,
Aaron Tveit.
I thought he did great. It's really
his voice is amazing.
I wanted him to play. I did want him to play Marius.
Yeah, like, I was surprised
when I heard the cast. I was like, why isn't he playing Marius?
What? But I'm also glad that he didn't though.
Yeah, he did a really good job with Angelus.
Yeah. I'm used to. I always forget the actor's name who played the new Phantom for Love Never Dies. Played this role in the 25th anniversary. His voice is so booming that.
Oh, the guy who played Angel around the 25th anniversary? Mm-hmm. I actually love
him. No, I do. That's what I'm saying. I loved him so much because his voice is so powerful. So it was... I love Aaron also because he's very soft and, like, he pushes to the point.
But he had that, like, really, like, intensity with the face.
The entire time. Yeah, like,
almost
the entire
like, come
movie.
On, guy. Take a break.
It's
his voice brows. Is, like, perfection to me.
It's so good. It's so nauseating, the fact, because I've read so much about him, that he never was about to do... musical theater or anything. In high school, he did it for extracurricular so he could get into college.
Wow.
And then it just, like, he just naturally has that. That's not fair.
That's just not right. That's not right. But he was one of my favorites out of the entire film. It was so good.
Yeah, I love the tribute they do the play with him with the death, because they wanted to go back into the cafe, mm-hmm. but they wanted to still tribute the way that he dies in the play, and I thought that was really cool.
Oh, man. Just every time I see that scene when they line everybody up, at their bodies, I was mm-hmm. just like, I can't. I, like, was not ready to see that scene. That was nuts. It was, again, too
it's
real.
Really good, though, because it's one of those things that uniquely, yes, you can have bodies on the stage, but it's very unique to film to be able to have these very realistically looking dead bodies.
Exactly. Well, and they're all children, too. Like, they're young people.
And getting onto the next person, Daniel Heddlestone.
Whoa.
When he died, that wasn't, like, a dummy lying there. That was him holding his eyes open that still.
Yeah. He was great.
He was really phenomenal. He really
was. He's been in some stuff, right?
Well, he was in Les Mis on Broadway. He played this role. Not on Broadway, on the West End.
Yeah, I didn't know
that. He played in Oliver. He was with Samantha Barks in Oliver.
That's right. Okay. Okay, okay.
And then since then, he's been in Into the Woods.
Yeah, he was the one that played the little kid, right? Yeah.
Jack.
Yeah.
I love this actor, and I love he's adorable. The Cockney accent was amazing.
See, this is why last week I was like, this is really, even though it started out as like a French musical, I was like, it's really a British like West End musical because like everybody here has like Cockney accents.
I know, but I just love Cockney accents. So as soon as he started talking, I was like,
especially when he's on the back of the carriage and talking to the camera,
that was a great shot.
Yeah, it was great.
He's so good. I can't wait to see what he is when he's actually like an adult.
Adult.
Dear God, he's going to be.
Like, if it's like a Haley Joel Osment or if it's actually good.
Wow, you just had
you
to bring that
there.
Up. Why do you want to break my heart over
I'm
and over?
Sorry, I'm
God.
Sorry. I love Haley Joel Osment. I just wish that he still did roles.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
rough.
And okay. I'm going to put these two together before I can do it. It's Helena Bonham Carter and Sacha Baron Cohen play the Thénardiers.
I love them for what they are. I just feel like they are so overplayed now. That's me, though, because I saw them in Sweeney Todd, and then I have this movie as well, and I'm like, I can't do it anymore, guys. I can't. I'm so done.
I just love them. I thought they did a great job. And I love the fact that Sacha Baron Cohen in The Master of the House, he's kind of, because you can tell that the characters are supposed to be these, like, Cockney characters, mm-hmm. but he's, like, switching in and out of this French accent when he starts
because
talking to
man.
People because he's a con man. And I was like, that's a great choice.
It's like this, I was so excited when I heard that they were playing it because I'm like, okay, this is a role that is the only comedic role in this entire play. And I felt that, not so much with Sacha Baron Cohen, but with Helena Bonham Carter, I felt that she held back a little too much. Like, she could have gone more, she could have been bigger, and she was very subdued, and I was like...
Was this after Harry Potter, or
after.
During? Okay, mm-hmm. Well, then never mind. Maybe she's just tired.
Well, I do feel like part of it might have been a reaction to having Sacha Baron Cohen as the master, as Mr. Thénardier, because... when she, like, she's reacting to the fact that you have this person who's like Borat playing, like, the over actor playing this role.
I
just
didn't find her character as interesting as his character, and like in the play I love,
I usually
love the,
yeah, they usually come
as partners.
Like,
I love the part, like, I love her coming in and like the whole like nothing there, and she did it so, like, the whole like penis joke, and she does it so like very quaintly, like, not much there.
I'm but in the play,
the I actually it's so funny because we're disagreeing on so many things, but I love how Helena Bonham Carter chooses to make the character kind of like this like sexy MILF character where she's like hitting on people.
I thought that was funny that she was hitting on him. It's just like it was everything. Like, it wasn't even just that one part was subdued. It was that entire song subdued the part. And like later on, it's just he's the starring, he takes the lead, and she's just kind of the background. And I felt like that character is just as much in the front as her husband is, and I didn't feel
like she was in the background, though.
I'm also going to be the Switzerland character or person in this discussion, is that I'm very in the middle, because I liked them both. I love what they put to the character, but at the same time, I felt like, at least for Helena Bonham Carter, that I feel like I wanted more from her. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit. But Sacha Baron Cohen was just fantastic.
I thought he was... really funny, and he did this, that's like the subduedness that he did was, I think, a good way of doing it. It was still funny, it still got the point across, and I just felt like hers wasn't as...
Do you think seeing that, though, is... Do you think you're thinking that because now you've seen Sweeney Todd, and she kind of does this, like, very overacting kind of acting in Sweeney Todd?
No, because I've seen her in, like, many things where she does it big, and that's why I was excited that she was going to be in it. Because I wanted that.
But she doesn't play big and... I mean, she... I think she's an actress who makes deliberate choices. Like, she's not very, like, flamboyant or big in Fight Club. She plays this kind of, like...
Yeah, but it still... I get the point across, and I just didn't get it in this. I don't know.
Makes sense. I get it. I understand it. I know what you mean. But we gotta talk about the big guy.
We're gonna segue into this.
Love you, Colm.
And I'm gonna kind of segue into this as our next little area, which is gonna be talking about all of the actors that they brought from West End and Broadway and that have done these roles into the show. So Colm Wilkinson will be the first, and he of course played the bishop.
God.
Like, when I heard he was playing the bishop, I was like, thank you, Jesus. It's so beautiful, though, because it's like the person who originated the role is playing the mentor of the new person who's playing the role.
And I've always been moved by the bishop, so I love that Colm got to play
him. And I love the fact that it's so cool to me that he's like play this part so many times, and now he gets to be the person that looks almost at himself and is like helping himself.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, the last time I got excited for Colm was when they did the quartet of the Valjean.
We played that last time.
Whoa. Yeah. Oh man, that drove me insane. It was beautiful.
These next actors, before we get into just an overall of it, I'm just going to go through them really quickly because otherwise we're going to take too long. We have Frances Raphael, of course, original Eponine.
Yep.
She was the, like, lead prostitute.
Whore number one, it says on IMDb.
I love that she played whore number one.
Whore number one.
I was like, get it, girl.
And then we had Hadley Frazier.
I didn't even know that he was in there until I looked it up for the show. I was like, wait, what? How did I miss that? Rewind.
It's also interesting because you hear, like, this is, again, one of the things that bothers me about having, like, weaker voices for the main actors, and then having the ensemble like this, they sound so pitch perfect when the ensemble
comes in. It's really weird.
Sometimes there's a stark contrast to certain songs, and then ensemble comes in. You're like,
Remember, I was going to read through.
Oh yeah, go.
Gina, we have Gina Beck. She was in her turning song.
I love her.
We have Michael Gibson. And he was the foreman.
I was wondering what his name was. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
he looked familiar.
George Blagden. Some of these were hard to get pictures of for some reason on Google, even though they were big parts of it.
I loved him.
We have Killian Donnelly.
He was also very good.
Wasn't he in the
25th anniversary also? Okay, I thought so. A lot of these guys were in there, I think.
Alistair Brammer.
Wow, look at that face.
Hugh Skinner.
I don't know what his face... Oh, never mind. Right back to me. Never mind.
Ewan Lewis.
I thought you said Norm Lewis. I was like, he was in it! He always looks like Eric Matthews to me.
Yeah, he does.
Then we have Stuart Neal.
The Han Solo over here.
Hannah Weddingham. She's actually on the left. I couldn't get one of her in the thing.
She doesn't have a solo shot.
I'm going to do a little segue here because I found out that she actually was in Game of Thrones as Septa Olma.
Shut up! That's her? Oh my god, I didn't even watch that.
She's always just a bad girl. Danielle Evans. I did he played not know. The pimp.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And Carrie Ellis is the last one. She gets pinched by Sarah Bachacoan on the boob.
Yeah.
I couldn't find a picture of her, so I had to screenshot it from YouTube, okay. So this is why it's blurred.
That's awesome.
So, oh, man. I really love when they do fan call-outs. Like, this is probably why I was a little more okay with them not using as many people in the main parts, is because, like I said, with the producers and stuff, at least they filled up and brought us them in, like, little fun ways.
Yeah, like, they could have just picked a bunch of random people who can sing and threw them into the ensemble. Yeah, but the
producers had Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane in the movie.
Yeah, but they were already names. People already knew who they were.
Yeah. But they're still, like, I mean, they still have, like, they were, they're Broadway actors.
I know,
yeah.
But they've also film actors. They've also been film actors. A lot of these people off of West End or Broadway won't know.
Yeah,
they
usually, yeah, you
would
never
know. And so producers are like, no one knows who that is. And, like, even though the theater community is so huge and you probably would fill a ton of seats doing this, like, that's not how they think, unfortunately.
Yeah. I'm still bitter about Norm. I'm not letting it go. Not letting it go.
All right, so going into the music for the show, I want to talk a little bit about, of course, the added song, which I forgot to put a clip in, so we won't have anything for it, but Suddenly was the added song.
The Oscar bait song.
Yep, there it is. Mm-hmm. I listened to it before we came in because I forgot about it. For some reason, I thought
it
was in the
musical.
And then when
you leave today, you too shall forget about it as well.
I just, it's not super terrible, but it definitely doesn't fit.
I don't mind it completely. Like, yeah, it's not memorable.
Yeah.
They did it as a segue. They felt like we needed to get to know Cosette a little more because they're going to jump forward.
Yep. But
we
need to see Castle on a cloud.
No, but they felt we needed to get the connection between him and her and why that he's adopting himself as this father role. That was just the kind of decision they made of why they had to. Plus, they always had a song in for Oscar.
Yeah, it was the BS decision they had for Oscar bait.
Yes. Yeah, which I was like, okay, fine, whatever. But don't take out songs that I actually like and then put in a song that I don't even give a crap about. Which we're going to get to. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump into it. My bad.
No, you're fine. So the songs that they cut out were Not Having I Saw Him Once and Dog Eats Dog. I don't care about Not Having Saw Him Once. It's it's whatever song. Dog Eats Dog, I was a little upset about. I understood the reasoning for taking it out because of, like, the flow of the sewer scene had to be kind of quick. It wouldn't have made sense. But I just love him being like, somebody's got to clean them up.
Yes! And it's just so cool to see him be like, you know, taking, like, what is it, a gold tooth out of one. And,
well,
like,
because you realize, like, not that you didn't already realize that these people are terrible, but you realize just the level of their depravity when they're, like, stealing from dead people.
And their terrible justification of what
right. And they're, like, gleeful. Stealing from dead people.
Yeah, I would love to see Sacha Baron Cohen and Helen Bonham Carter fucking skipping down, like, the sewers. Yes. Like,
I mean, the only reference we get to that is when they're singing One Day More and they're putting their guns in their, like, belt holsters. They're like, someone's gotta, you know.
Yeah. That and a little bit at the end of the play when he's all like, I got this little souvenir. Because he's, like, telling him, like, oh, I saw him carrying a boy he just killed through the sewer, but I got this souvenir.
I love that they were at the wedding and they were sitting there, like, messing with their fake,
I was upset they cut part of their song out the wedding. Because they'd have the whole thing about how some of the people there are probably queer and, like, all this.
Yeah, it was, I felt like they cut a lot of their cute partner-y songs.
Well, what I was saying was, they did shoot the entirety of the musical with all of the songs originally, and the film was 4 hours long.
So they had to cut,
understandably, but I really do want them to release the full thing.
Yeah, they should have an extended cut. If you can do that for Batman versus Superman, you can do it for Les Miserables. Yes.
Batman v Superman.
Oh, excuse me, but still, it's BS.
Still never seen that.
Yeah, take out the V, it's BS. That's all I'm saying.
Some of the more noticeable ones they shortened was The Attack on Rue Plummet, and Little People.
Yeah, I like Little People.
Yeah,
I
like Little People, too.
Yeah, because I wanted more Gavroche, but that's me, though.
I mean, they kept the reprise in, luckily.
Yeah.
It is kind of his big song.
Yeah, I always loved that.
One of the choices, which I do agree with for this, they excluded Eponine. And brought back in the bishop for the finale.
You know what? It makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense when you're doing a movie like that and you have, you have someone like Colm who played the original role. You want to give him more airtime, and that's, like, the only place
also,
you can put him.
Also, it makes sense having the person that first gave him his first chance after prison also welcome him in.
Well, yeah, he didn't really know Eponine, so it makes
sense. Yeah, because in the play, Eponine delivers him the note, so at least there's kind of a connection with them in the play.
But we didn't
get that. But there's not in the movie at all. They don't even meet each other in the film.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It doesn't make sense. They did originally have her and Anne Hathaway, and then also the the bishop.
Yeah.
But they just were like, that seems it like makes a lot. No sense to have her here. Yeah, so they cut her out.
And I think the other reason they have it in the play is because it's more of an effect of like, oh, these are two beautiful, like, angelic, beautiful angel voices.
Who died, too.
Yeah. So it's more, in the play, to me, it reads more, less like the actual characters and more like angels. And then when you're doing something here, like, where a movie is a little bit more literal and you're actually, like, seeing the person standing there, you're like, well, probably makes more sense to have Cole Wilkinson.
No, and who doesn't want to listen to Cole Wilkinson talk?
I know. That ending gets me every time.
It kind of brought a full circle. Time. We started off with that and we're ending with that. Yeah. So
and then they go to the barricade and then I'm weeping.
And they also made the choice
to
take...
I'm going
to
weep here right now if we keep talking about it.
They made the choice to take Marius and Cosette off the barricade.
Yes.
Which I thought was a good choice.
Makes
on their
sense, because it's the barricade in heaven.
But they...
It is.
It's true.
Well, they have them singing it. They said that they were going to, like, have this whole thing of, like, oh, it's them later on in life. They've now died, and now they've come back, like, Titanic-esque, and now are young again.
Hey, I'm
but
totally
no one
fine
would
it.
Understand that.
No. Yeah. No.
So it was a smart decision. That's so funny. And that's going to segue a little bit into... I just want to talk just a tiny bit about the scenery and the designs, because I thought that it was amazing.
My God. It's amazing because they basically built it all in England.
Yes!
Which is what is so amazing to me. It's and like... They built all these French sets in England. They poured all this dirt down.
They CGI'd texture from the actual places, like the ship. They went to the actual ship and took the photos of the texture of the wood and photoshopped, CGI'd them onto it.
Oh,
which
so
is, like,
cool.
A really cool
thing also,
to
I
do.
Felt I felt bad for the beat for our opening scene, because we had actors in icy cold
water. Singing as the water's being thrown
If you didn't
at them.
Know, if you haven't watched this film yet, everybody is singing live. So these poor blokes are sitting here getting water just, like flash flood on top of them as they're trying to sing notes. And they still sounded fantastic.
That's
I mean,
I was like... Yeah, kudos to you.
I mean, I probably would have at least appreciated a little bit of ADR, because, dear God, that was crazy. But, like, you can't... I will never get that out of my head of, like, that's rough.
Yeah.
Poor...
Especially Hugh Jackman, who hasn't drank for 36 hours.
Well, there you go. He got all of the seawater right there.
I know. I was like, was he just like...
Poor thing.
And the... I felt kind of bad for the art director who made the barricade, because they actually are throwing the stuff out of the windows, and they had the students create... that barricade that's in the film now.
Yeah.
And then they kind of liked it so much, and it worked very well. They did it in one shot, that they just kind of hammered it together. And were like, we're just going to use this one instead of the one that they were going to bring in afterwards.
Wow.
So someone built a whole other barricade that they didn't get to ever be on film.
They could put that somewhere.
My one shot to be on film.
I'm sure that happens a lot, though, where someone's idea gets, like, scrapped for a different idea.
Yeah, that probably something that was, like, spontaneous. They're like, that works better.
And then, of course, we have to talk, like you were saying just then, we have to talk about singing live.
That
was the first time this has ever really been
done. I mean, it won the Oscar for Best Sound Mixing because they sang live.
I mean, for those who don't know, they had little things in their ears. They had someone in a different room playing for them so they could hear it, and they sang and they filmed it.
There was at one point where I think Eponine was walking through the streets or at some point in time, and there was just a guy at a piano just like blocks away who was just like...
I would love to. I would pay so much money to be...
It was such a smart decision,
but this... musical, especially because of how much emotion has to be in this musical, and it really came through in the singing.
Yeah.
And well, it helps also, like we were saying with, like, Anne Hathaway, it helps inform a very, like, emotional performance, whereas on stage the emotion comes through in the song, but here, like, you have these people, like, actually performing these actions and, like, singing, and it brings a different type of emotional resonance.
And then we're kind of getting low on time, so I'm gonna get through to this next section. We have a clip of the Academy Awards.
Oh man, that was fun. Here,
and as we're doing that, I'm gonna kind of go over nominated for time's sake.
Do what you gotta do.
So this was their performance from the Academy Award that they performed live as well.
Awesome.
It's coming. Oh, it's coming. I'll talk over this suddenly since
Go for it. Yeah, because I'm like, mwah.
So this was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor for Hugh Jackman, Best Supporting Actress for Anne Hathaway, Best Original Song for Suddenly, Best Costume Design, which I didn't win, which I was kind of sad about, Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Best Sound Mixing.
It won the Best Makeup and
Best Production Design. And it won makeup and hair, it won sound mixing, and it won... Anne Hathaway obviously won.
Which she totally deserved it. She did a great really bang-up job. Oh, look at that beautiful face!
When they did this at the Oscars, I just, like... all the feels were happening.
Yeah, no, it was a really wonderful, moving performance.
Yeah. See, I would have rather them did this and they were like, oh, we had to cut it out of the film for whatever. Here, we're going to perform it for you now.
But I understand. Moore is so iconic.
Yeah.
Oh, her hair's starting to grow back.
Well, yeah, because I think now she was starting to do other films at this point, so she needed her hair back. So fast.
And I liked that they kind of put little bits of other
songs. Yeah, no, I like that too. It's a medley. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Oh my god, you guys are going to try to make me cry on stage is what's happening.
The most powerful point for me, well, there was two. It's when Samantha Barks comes on.
She shows up in between them. Yeah.
Because it's just like, oh my god.
Yeah. Look at her! She's gorgeous! Oh my god, I'm gonna start crying.
I mean, she does have a small waist, as is.
She's actually a very skinny person. Yeah. It's just that the corset pushes everything up, so you're like, wait, what's happening?
So you're like, why is this a musical that big?
Yeah, but she's so beautiful. And I love how they shot that. That's just so good.
And I actually did get... I liked... Like I said, because I felt so bad for Russell Crowe with every bad thing. Oh, like, so much. The fact that he came and did it, I was like... He could have just been like, I'm not doing it.
You guys can just do it. Yeah.
No, I think that would have worked. Perfect man is perfect.
It's not even fair.
I'm just gonna it's just...
Oh, I like the moving panels they have, too, behind really cool. to let the people out.
I don't care who you are. Anytime somebody brings this song up, there has to be a group of people who sing with you. You can't do it.
Also, I don't care who you are. If you watch this and you don't have a little bit of emotion, I'm tearing up right now.
Like, I don't understand now. You. It's not even. It's.
I
not
think
even.
We all are. We all have like a little glisten happening.
Oh my gosh! Oh my god! It's so moving. I love Helena Bonham Carter's hair. Oh, the head
shaking. She's so great.
Oh, the head shaking.
Yeah, I'm like, why?
He has to just hold his jaw really tight.
I don't understand it. Because I'm like, Hugh Jackman doesn't do that?
No.
Nobody I know does that.
If you watch the Tony Awards for Next to Normal, actually the dad from Next to Normal
does it. Yeah, that was
also
kind of
annoying. And
he's
a Broadway singer, so, I mean, it does happen, I guess.
I'm not saying that
it's just weird when you're watching it, like, on film. Because you're so close and just
a bobblehead is happening. This. Yeah.
So, I want to... go into, we've already kind of said our diva song, but Alexis, we didn't hear yours. What is your diva song for the show? What song do you sing out loud?
On My Own, as always. On My Own?
That was Jackie's?
Yeah, no, it's the one song I have to literally pull over if it comes on my playlist, and I'm like, I don't care if I'm late, I need to sing this song fully. I can't do it while I'm driving.
That was my song in high school, and then I switched it.
Would you switch it?
P.S. in the movie. In the movie, when Eddie Redmayne, when they're doing the little Fall of Rain, Eddie Redmayne is like, he's like smiling at her though. I'm like, F you, Marius. Stop smiling. She's dying.
No, what I hate, and it's in the musical and in the play, like, I don't know if I said it last time or not, but when they're singing it, and he's like, oh my God, like, you're dying. If I could switch place, if I could show you how much I love you. And she's like, oh yes. And then it's over. And then we go into Drink With Me, and he's all like, well, Cozette, like, he just goes straight.
Yeah, he completely forgot about her. I don't like Marius's character.
No, I think the reason he did that is because both of them know that he's not in love with her, and both of them know that he's doing that. He's doing
out
that
of disrespect,
out of respect
it
for
still
her.
Makes me mad.
It's still, that's the one thing I hate about
Marius. I'm like, give her 5 minutes, come on.
Oh, God.
But it did bother me that he was smiling. I was like, stop smiling.
Like,
what is this?
Poor girl.
Because I was trying to pinpoint why I didn't like that scene in the movie, and it's not... Yeah. To me, I was like, I really love Samantha Barks, so I'm not sure why this bothers me. And then I was like, that's why, because he keeps smiling.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to the end of our show.
Yay!
Which do we prefer, musical, theater, or film? Alexis?
Musical theater, all the way. I don't know what it is. I mean, I love my musical movies. I think they're fantastic for what they are, but they will never take away the emotions and the feelings that I get when I see it on stage from just actors who are just... given it their all, but I like this movie will always top any musical movies because of the fact that they decided to go the next level and have their actors sing live. That'll be something that I will always cherish because that's fantastic, and I think that more musical movies should do that. Or
Jackie?
Not, I don't know.
I agree with Alexis where I have respect for this movie because of what they did, because the actors work really hard, but nothing tops a musical to me. I mean, nothing quite beats being in the room.
Yeah.
Where it happened.
Yeah. Oh, you son of a...
I, too, It's theater for me, but I will say that this film, I thought they did an amazing job with it. I think that it gave me the same feeling of the play in some ways, and I will say it's in my top three musical movies.
No, yeah, same here, for sure.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us again for Broadway Breakdown. Again, go to our YouTube and our SoundCloud and our Google Play. Subscribe to us, like us, leave us comments.
We have a Facebook page for Broadway Breakdown. And next week, we're recapping Cursed Child.
Yes, so. Next week will be the Cursed Child that we're gonna talk about. We're going to have some fun people talking with us. You can always reach me, BFIPS14. Guys, where can they find you?
At 123JackieB on all platforms.
And ATORS890 all over social media.
So make sure you join us next week for another fun week of Broadway Breakdown, and we'll see you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.